This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
Every day is just one heartbeat away from a headline. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer.
Richard Allen found guilty, and she's been following this case from the very beginning. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI Special Agent. I know this is one of the cases that has been super close to you and your heart. What was your reaction when we got the verdict just the other day? Richard Allen, guilty on all counts.
Right. Well, Tony, I have to tell you, I expected it. I actually sent out something earlier that day that he would be found guilty. I've always said it's going to be because of the bullet, magic bullet. Mm-hmm. I think that was the foundation of the reason, the main reason. But from a personal standpoint, I could not have voted guilty on that ballot. I couldn't have raised my hand as guilty from what I know, but I don't think the jurors got to know everything.
Yeah.
And so I really respect the time and the energy and emotion that had to have been what those jurors felt.
Yeah.
So, I respect their verdict. I just could not have voted guilty personally.
No, I agree. Were you surprised by the end of this, that the defense or the prosecution really didn't put out, I think in most people's idea, a very strong case against Richard Allen? It was pretty much everything we already knew, but I think even some of the evidence flimsier than we thought it was going to be until it reached the courtroom.
Well, I think myself and many people in the true crime community, we really expected these bombshell confessions with a beginning and an end. You know, I woke up and then, very specifics about the crime, specifics about what he did. We didn't get any of that. It was very general. There were 61 of them. They were very convoluted, of course, amidst a lot that might have been going on with him in the prison. Not saying he was persecuted there, just saying anyone in SEG in a maximum security prison, it would take everything they had mentally to overcome that if they'd never been in prison before, which he'd never even been in jail before, an absolutely clean criminal record. So I think I was disappointed in the details that weren't there in the confessions. The van was mentioned, but that's also problematic for me, just knowing from the very beginning there were talks of a van, and he would likely have known that from discovery and also possibly from conversations with Dr. Walla. Mm-hmm. So I wish those would have been cleaner, the confessions. I wish that the testimony from the witnesses regarding the person they saw on the bridge would have been cleaner and matched. The confession or the details regarding the vehicles would have matched instead of been three different vehicles they described. The bullet, I do believe from all accounts that that expert was a very good expert, knew what she was doing, and believed in her analysis. But that analysis isn't a fingerprint. It's not DNA. And there were a lot of issues concerning the analysis from my view. And so I think I was just so disappointed that it wasn't stronger.
And it was surprising, I guess not surprising because we knew it going in, just how little would be able to be argued on the part of Richard Allen. But after seeing what was argued and the way that they stopped, fairly early, I think, surprised a lot of people. Should they have gone on longer? Should they have made more arguments? Should there have been more witnesses brought to the stand to really show who Richard Allen is and was prior to this? From obviously, we didn't get to sit there and watch it, but a lot of logistics discussed here, but not a lot about selling the character of Richard Allen, it feels like, to the jury itself.
I agree with you. How they did not call people from his National Guard unit, how they did not call people from his CVS store. I mean, he worked there over a decade.
Yeah.
How did they not call people from the pool hall, you know, his best buddies? How come his wife didn't take the stand? Why didn't he take the stand? Considering everything that was on the line and the fact that they would not allow any third party culprit defense, that leaves you with character and that leaves you with Richard Allen. And then the other issue was the fact that they did not test the bullet or the gun. They just relied on photos, and the other witness was excused from testimony because he didn't test anything. That was a huge mistake on the part of the defense, which I think occurred because of money, because there was very little money allowed in this case for experts.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously that does, you know, put a kink into one's plans if you can't afford to get those witnesses. They're not cheap by any stretch of imagination. But it did feel like the character of Richard Allen, I still don't know much about Richard Allen other than like the logistics of, you know, where he worked and he has a family, no history, but that's just kind of it. And in a case like this, where it's so brutal and horrible, you got to humanize the person that they're making out to be this monster. And I still think we just walk away with, we've seen many pictures of Richard Allen, but I don't even know, you know, his voice. But, you know, they liked to try and argue about his voice in this case, saying that he is the man on the bridge, saying down the hill. Their officer expert, where did he base that on? Just his opinion, but presented it as fact on the stand. What was your thoughts on that, where he said, that's Richard Allen's voice? Just his opinion.
Well,
though.
I don't think it should have been allowed.
Yeah.
That's so unusual. First of all, voice exemplars could have been taken from Richard Allen. They could be court ordered and compared, and they didn't want to do that, I'm quite sure, because voice, people who analyze voices, even in the FBI, even in the laboratory, all the years that I worked those kinds of cases and used the lab in that regard, they will never say it's his voice. Mm-hmm. They will just say whether it tends to have the characteristics or doesn't. Mm-hmm. So, or it can't be excluded, or it could be excluded, but it may be, they're very wishy-washy. Same with handwriting typically.
Yeah.
So it doesn't surprise me that they didn't want that on the record, you know, some wishy-washy account. But
yeah.
I could tell you what typically is used are people who know him that come forward. And if you look, as an example, in the Ron Logan affidavit, you know, another person that was considered at least by the FBI as being responsible for this crime, these crimes, his girlfriend came forward and said, that's him. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's documented in the affidavit that was presented. So that's typically what happens is a loved one, a friend, a family, you put them on the stand and they say, yes, you know, under oath. Yes, that's my uncle's voice or whatever it might be. And they didn't do any of that. And to put a police officer who probably heard him talk twice is absolutely not an expert. And I thought it was remiss. I think this is going to be a big point of appeal. The fact that an officer was able to say what his reflections were about the video and that he thought it was the voice, that is a fact for the jury to consider, not for the jury to be told.
Yeah, especially when it's coming from an officer. I mean, there's some more weight behind that. It sounds more official when it's coming from someone like that than just somebody, it sounds like him. I was shocked by that element of the case. Let's talk about Ron Logan a little bit. I mean, you know this case better than I think almost anyone I know. Obviously, Ron Logan had passed away after all this took place. We're talking back in 2017 when the girls were murdered. Why wasn't there more looked into on him and the part of the Delphi police investigating him, considering you had a girlfriend that's saying, yeah, that's him?
You know, essentially, what was relayed to me is that the local authorities thought he was too old to commit a crime like this. It didn't really make much sense because you can see Ron Logan walking on the bridge. You can see him walking on his property. It was on his property. He was a huge man and certainly physically fit enough. But that's what the thought process was. At least that's what was told me from the inner, some people inside that investigation. And there were certainly people within the Bureau compared to the people in local law enforcement that they were not on the same page. And thus you saw after a couple years, there was a big divide and the Bureau was no longer part of the case.
What do we know about Ron Logan's like history, criminal history? Does he have much of anything? I know there was like some tickets here and there, automobile related. Is there anything deeper?
Well, he certainly had a history of using alcohol. He had a history of domestic violence that was testified to. He, you know, quite frankly, was not considered a very decent man at all in the community, from all accounts. Not a good guy.
Yeah.
But in terms of his actual convictions, I would have to look that up. But I recall distinctly he had a domestic violence background regarding different women he was involved in. One that escaped, as she would tell it, with her life, as she drove away and he assaulted her. You know, definitely a violent background.
Yeah. The portrait of a character who could be capable of something like this. Keegan Klein, obviously another big character in this, who again, not charged with anything, but he's away. On his own separate charges for child pornography, he's away for 40 some years, was communicating with one of the girls right up until pretty much the day that they were murdered, even planned on meeting with them, talked about it at least. Help me understand this one and how that all just kind of went away in terms of him being a suspect.
Well, you raise such great questions. I mean, essentially, law enforcement hooked them, meaning Libby and Keegan Klein, through an account, a phishing account under the name of Anthony Schatz, which was, you know, a very good looking, a guy that came across through Keegan Klein's creation as rich and well-spoken. And that's who he used to sort of fish for all these young girls. And later on, it was believed by law enforcement because Keegan Klein came forward and talked about the gun that was used and that he was involved with that. His father was involved and that it was thrown in a body of water. So he was actually, and this is quite a involved process, he was removed from jail, which is very, very rare to get everyone to agree to that because allowed to come out, help them search, and essentially nothing was found. And so they chalked that up as, you know, him being a liar and not telling the truth. He wasn't given consideration for the charges. And, you know, he was convicted on multiple child pornography charges. So that, to me, will always be an issue because later, he communicated with another young girl and again about hooking up. And that girl was, you know, right after their discussion, a man was at the woman's house, the young girl's house with a mask on. So very scary situation. And so, you know, it leads one to wonder who was in his circle that he might've communicated some of these communications with.
Yeah. And if he wasn't going to go meet with them that day, who did and who is in that circle? But it seems like there was never really investigated much of his circle.
Yeah, you know, those types of charges, it's so big when it comes to digital evidence. And I think especially once the Bureau was out of it, that's just a big ask for the state police to continue with all those details. I think there were issues with the Snapchat type accounts, accounts that, you know, come and disappear. And so it was never really clear as to how he was just suddenly cleared. One minute, you know, they think they're hunting for the gun that was involved in this, and the next minute he was just cleared. And that's, again, the same MO as with Ron Logan. But I will say a couple of things, Tony. Yeah. One, Kelsey, the sister of Libby, specifically said that from her recollection, it was a last minute decision that she and Abby decided to take this walk, that in fact, Kelsey was invited. So that does beg the question then, were they really going to have a meetup if they invited the older sister? You know, again, you know, we don't know, but that was the best recollection. And I do think that's important. And I always say, too, we weren't there in the courtroom to check the veracity of witnesses and look at all the crime scene photos. And so, you know, I give deference to the jury. I just think it's terrible he wasn't allowed to make an argument.
Yeah, I feel like the jury was just, it's like walking into a movie halfway through and not quite understanding, you know, who's who. And kind of being screwed up you, without the context of the rest of the movie, you're not going to be able to really kind of understand or make good decisions or opinions on anything if you don't know half of the story, which is what the jury essentially did. They didn't have a choice because of everything being blocked. There's just so many names that that come up in this case that seem to be very solid leads. I think in almost any other case, you would be looking much more into them, but they just brushed off. There's another handful here, more so in the world of Odinism. Of course, it's also was not allowed to be talked about. Let's go through some of these. Brad Holder, the avowed Odinist, initially a suspect due to his religious affiliations to the crime scene. The defense argued that elements of the crime scene, such as the rune-like formations, pointed to the ritualistic killings. However, obviously, the theory obviously dumped by the court. What about his involvement in any of this?
Well, it didn't ferret out, but it was certainly looked at, and it was looked at by the FBI and by the task force officers. And so, you know, but we've seen what happened since then, right? One individual that looked into it, he was charged for fraud on a completely unrelated matter. Another task force officer was actually shot and killed at kind of a shoot-off situation at the in and around the FBI office. Generally, that's what happened. So, but essentially, that path was followed, and it wasn't believed to really ferret out, I think, in large part because of Ron Logan. The belief by the FBI that Ron Logan was involved.
What about Patrick Westfall and his involvement? And I know he also had connections to Odinism as well.
Yeah, none of them essentially, Tony, ferreted out. And I never bought into anything to do with the Odinism. Sure. As an example, the rune that was on the tree, you know, what was called a rune, which they later said was Libby's hand, you know, with blood as she, you know, scrambled backwards, if you will. Yeah. I can only imagine deliriously, you know, having been cut and placed her hand on that tree. That's the thought process. But the big problem was, if they could have just taken that bark and done the correct investigation 7 years ago now, there would have been no discussion of rune likely, because they would have gotten DNA.
And
made some decisions. So I don't think it was a rune. I think the long of the short of it was that never ferreted out. And I understand the judge saying, listen, we're just not going to throw mud up on a wall and blame everyone and anyone, like in the Karen Reed case, for a crime with absolutely no evidence against these people. But where that goes astray to me off the tracks is Ron Logan and Keegan Klein, at least to some degree.
The other interesting character in this, Elvis Fields, a lot of people will say that he seemed to have knowledge of the actual crime scene himself, even making some weird comments. Let's talk about him for a moment and just the bizarre place that he put himself in this whole thing.
Well, and a lot of people, certainly I've seen online over and over again, there's certainly a whole group that are behind the belief that he was involved, and some of it was, you know, knowledge, if you will. But the problem with this case is from the beginning, so much was leaked. Really, the Ron Logan affidavit was leaked. Crime scene pictures, you know, ungodly crime scene pictures were leaked, even, you know, very recently for a second time. Other crime scene pictures years ago were leaked. Remember, these girls were found by citizenry. And so in a small town, you know, obviously people talked, small town police force, a lot of individuals involved in this. So there was a lot of information very early on about the details of this crime. Most of us knew there was never sexual assault. Most of us knew about the bullet. Most of us knew that their throats were slit. Most of us knew they were moved. Most of us knew they were concealed by foliage or tree branches and things. So much was leaked so early, unfortunately, that it was really hard to tell who really knew what and why.
Didn't Elvis make a comment about if he spit on the girls, would that connect him to the crime scene? Am I correct in that statement?
I've read that.
Okay.
And Tony, I have to tell you, there is so much in this case that has been contrived, that has been not properly really relayed.
Vetted.
Vetted. Just like in most cases, man, if I can't see it, for the most part, if I can't see it on the docket, if I can't see it in the court documents, I just give so much pause to it. This case particularly was a nightmare because everything that we got to see was because others gave it to us. Reporters, YouTubers, and we were at their mercy. And as you know, I could sit here right now and you could go on a dialogue about something and I could take notes and maybe get one quote right and probably miss a great deal what you said afterwards because I was so busy writing that quote.
Sure.
And that's what I would have to relay. And that's what happened in this case. Yeah. I never got a clear picture of all the testimony and everything because of the lack of transparency in this matter.
There was so much of it all the way to the very, very end. I thought you had a very good tweet, and I want to read part of it. This was right after the verdict. I woke up. This is from the perspective of if it was, in fact, Richard Allen. I woke up. I visited my mom. I gathered my gun and box cutter because I was planning to rape and kill little girls. I've been a CVS clerk for over a decade and have no criminal record. I serve my country as a National Guardsman without issue, but on 2/13/17, I just got the urge to kidnap two little girls, take them to someone else's property, and slit their throats after undressing them. Yes, I'm 45 and have never looked at child pornography or inquired about how to commit a murder or cover up such a murder before. I know I'm only 5'4", 5", but I think I can likely control two teenagers if they see I have a gun. I was just lucky to stumble upon two girls I could attack in public. This is what you must believe if you're willing to convict Richard Allen. And apparently that jury was able to believe that.
Yes, Tony. And I stand by that tweet. I'll be bothered by this case, but yet I respect the jury's opinion based on what they had to work with.
It'll be very interesting to see the next steps in this as the appeals process begins to play out, or I'd mentioned this too, new evidence. New evidence can also bring a new trial back to light, maybe even faster than going through the actual appeals process. And it just feels like there's a lot sitting out here in the field that needs to be looked at a little bit more in detail, if we can even see it anymore. That's the problem with time. Some of it's already eroded. Jennifer Coffin, retired FBI special agent, thank you for discussing this one and giving us your insight.
Thank you, Tony.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're in the thick of a true crime saga, every detail sinking in, and then, wham, a commercial about something you couldn't care less about. It's like being served a microwaved dinner at a five-star restaurant. But it doesn't have to be this way. Go for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. With True Crime Today Premium Plus, you get uninterrupted, ad-free episodes, extended interviews that dig even deeper into the muck, and early access so you can brag to your friends. It's like ordering the secret menu at a crime buffet. So, search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and savor every twisted detail without interruption.